to my podcast series called Becoming a Sage. My name is Jan Free, but you can call me Dr. Jan. I'm passionate about helping people get from where they are to where they want to be, particularly in the second half of life. I selected Dr. Tim Ehrig to interview because how people spend their final years, months, and days can be both emotionally and financially draining, while not being the best for the patient. Since this series is about making the rest of life the best of life, I wanted to interview Dr. Tim, who is a national expert in the field of palliative care. He has a passion for doing what is right for the patient and encouraging people to talk about these things before decisions need to be made. For more information on Dr. Tim, please refer to his bio attached to this podcast. Well, welcome, Dr. Tim.
Well, thank you very much. How are you?
Good. And I'm looking forward to getting into this because, as I said, my focus is saging, which is really positive aging, and helping people understand some of the issues that come with this new kind of phase of life between 50 and 75 and beyond. So why don't we just, if you could explain palliative care, not everyone, our listeners may not know, and how you got into this work, and particularly why understanding this is so important to positive aging.
That's a big question. I'll do my best.
Okay.
I would offer the easiest way to explain what palliative care is, as I do to patients that I meet. I explain that I'm a physician and I work with really people of all ages who are dealing with serious illness. And it could be a new diagnosis. It could be something that is already something they're dealing with and is progressing and there's changes in their lives. My job is to put this puzzle together, to understand where we are at this moment in time, but to go backwards and say, how were we 6 weeks ago, 6 months ago, 6 years ago? Let's talk about the journey. How did we come to find ourselves right here? And then to just kind of stop and say, all right, we have an understanding. And before we say, here are the next 5 or 500 things, you know, medically that are going to happen, I say, what is important to you? Tell me about you, the human being, the person. What is sacred to you? That is the foundation upon which we move forward. Medicine, particularly in this country, is this linear algorithmic model where we do things to people. If A, then B. Even C. Those aren't always congruent with somebody's goals or somebody's wishes, desires, or what they want from their life. So we have to find out about the human being before we start mapping out the future. Whether that's widely metastatic cancer, or a new diagnosis of dementia, anything in between. So my job is to put that puzzle together. Listen and hear who somebody is. And then say, these are the things that are really consistent with what you want, and just try to make it happen. The unique thing I would offer about palliative care is absolute transparency. I may have good news or I may have difficult news, but I'm always going to put that right in front of you because it's your life. It's not mine. It's not my agenda. It's not this goofy long white coat. You are the boss. And as much as we can, I want to give you the pen so you can write those chapters of your life. Mm-hmm. So that's the start.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a general, you know, what is palliative care? It is important to know that it is not hospice.
Mm-hmm.
And hospice is way down at the end, and everything hospice is palliative care.
Mm-hmm.
But palliative care can extend for years.
Mm-hmm. That was one of my questions. How does hospice fit into this? But go ahead.
Sure. You know, hospice at one level is a Medicare insurance benefit. If physicians deem that your life expectancy, how long you have left to live, for whatever reason, is 6 months or less, you essentially have the opportunity to enroll and participate in hospice and the hospice benefits. Palliative medicine can be delivered concurrently, so the same time as active treatment, chemotherapy, surgeries, doctor's visits, hospitalizations, it can affectionately go on for years and years and years. So it's much, much different. And so not everything palliative is hospice, just the very, very final chapter, if one chooses to engage in hospice. But everything hospice is palliative, the alleviation of suffering, the empowering with information, eliciting of what is important to you, given what's going on, so you can live your life. So that's kind of it in a nutshell.
No, that's good. As people live longer, is this a growing field? Is this becoming more common?
I would offer that it is, but it is still fraught with a lot of misconceptions. And as a field, I would say we are in our pre-adolescence, kind of just learning to walk. And so the collective narrative is not all the same. You know, a lot of people working in this space believe that palliative is really just an on-ramp to hospice, to the end-of-life conversation. What we've done, and the philosophy I have, is extended it very far upstream to deal with anybody who has, you know, these serious, potentially irreversible, life-threatening illnesses, regardless of age. How do you want to live? And we take it one day at a time. So my philosophy tends to be a little different than mainstream. And then if you go out into the bigger world of healthcare, forgive my language, but palliative medicine is often bastardized as it's the same thing as hospice. It's trying to talk people out of treatment. It is just pushing them to their graves. It's euthanasia is some things that I've heard. It is the antithesis of really death. The focus is on living. Very, very different. And so we have to change the narrative. And that is, you know, one of the reasons I'm so honored to be here is to have this conversation to help to change that narrative so people have a different understanding.
Yeah. Well, and that's really important because my listeners, you know, are really trying to learn how to live the rest of their lives. So what makes your philosophy so successful? And I think you said you have a personal story to tell with that, maybe?
I do. There's no secrets. I combine a little bit of medicine and science with a whole lot of caring. When we go through training as physicians, whether it's medical school, residency, or beyond, we are taught about disease and pathology and trying to cure, trying to save life. The nuanced version of saving life for me is not just perpetuation of breathing and a heartbeat, but how do we look at 50% of the body that's physical and this other 50% that is emotive and social and spiritual, if you will, and combine them together? Now, unless we have those two halves joined, we're stagnant. It takes a whole human being to move forward in life, and we need to honor both halves, bring them together, and then we can move forward regardless of where we're at on our journeys. So saving a life to me is really in the context of what are we dealing with, coupled with what is it that you want, given the true nature of the disease. For example, my mother is dealing with a rapidly progressive dementia on top of end-stage lung disease. And with absolute certainty, I know what this journey is going to be like. I know what all of our dreams are going to be like, you know, ultimately. But I know that these diseases are progressive, irreversible, and ultimately fatal. So it's not about the latest, greatest bells and whistles and tests, and let's get more CAT scans and chest x-rays and to the hospital every time my mom coughs, and trying this and trying that. The care is based on who she is, how she's lived, what she's told us is valued to her, and that is quality. She's a extremely gregarious woman still. And it's about control. She wants to stay in her home with my father, no matter what. We understand the inherent risks, but the benefits as well. something we've had many conversations about when she was still competent. Mm-hmm. And so our job is to be stewards of that journey, mm-hmm. and mindful of how we can bring to them things that can enhance that quality and support them based on where they're at and what they're doing. So very different than just another medication, mm-hmm. and let's try to beat or fool Mother Nature, mm-hmm. because ultimately we can't. Mm-hmm. Please don't take this as wanting my mother to die, mm-hmm. okay? Or not wanting to do everything I can for her. Mm-hmm. I want to do those things that respect, provide dignity, and are consistent with who she is and the diseases she's dealing with.
Mm-hmm. I think you're really talking about quality of life.
Absolutely.
You know, trying to maintain quality of life, you know, as long as you can. Mm-hmm.
That's not necessarily mutually exclusive of surgery, you know, a heart catheterization, chemotherapy. Absolutely not. A vast majority of the people in my practice over the years have been going through all of those things as well. And so our job is to walk with them as things change. You know, the only absolute certainty is that things will change. Mm-hmm. And then the other expertise that the palliative physician brings is to focus on symptoms, both physical and non-physical. So if I can indulge in a young lady here from Des Moines, was 38 and diagnosed with breast cancer, a good friend of ours. Mm-hmm. And the conversation initially, she said, you know, Tim, can you come over to the house? I know this is a field you work in. I don't really know what you do, but my husband's here, his parents, my parents, they had two little kids. She said, I've been diagnosed with breast cancer. And here's the next 18 months of my life. My oncologist has spelled it out for me. Bilateral mastectomy, so the removal of both breasts. Mm-hmm. It's chemotherapy, it's radiation, and on and on and on. And she said, I don't even know what cancer is. Mm-hmm. So we said, this is what cancer is, this is what breast cancer is, this is what your breast cancer is. And there was this pause, and she said, this is something that could kill me? And not to be mean or scary, I said, yeah. You know, there is a 1 in 7 chance that you could die from this. Now, consistent with who you are and what you want is all these things. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about the chemo and the radiation and the surgery and what that really is. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about how we have a fluid, ongoing, dynamic conversation. If things go the way that we hope they don't, you know, it shouldn't be this total affront and shock to you as it is too many times in this culture. Where the conversation is, there's nothing else I can do for you. Which, first of all, is wrong. There's always something we can do. We can always care. And so we talked about what radiation and what chemo and what the side effects are and how I could be there for her and her family to hang IV fluids at 2 a.m. if she's dehydrated, and how I can work with her to keep her from throwing up all the time and each step along the way. So while it is a scary, horrendous journey to go through cancer and cancer treatment, it certainly was elevated in a higher quality because we were able to be honest, proactive, and manage a lot of the symptoms. In addition to all that clinical conversation, it was engaging with her and her husband and her parents and said, what is, again, what is it that you hold sacred and what are you afraid of?
Those are excellent questions, yes.
And most people are not afraid of actually dying, but kind of getting dead. Mm-hmm. You know, what would that journey look like? And then we engaged about the relationships in her life. I said, this is a transformative time. And we are negligent if we don't come to the table and say, you are going to undergo a transformation. Physical, you know, your appearance. It's going to be emotional, psychological, and so are you, speaking to her husband. Mm-hmm. And the most important thing I can offer is communication. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about something, sexuality. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean intercourse.
No.
I mean holding hands, the appearance and the perception of the intimacy of day-to-day living. Things are going to change, but the dyad of that relationship is going to be steadfast if you communicate. And you know that you may be scared, but bring that to the table. And let's walk this journey together. And so,
I think that's excellent, yeah. I mean, this really resonates with my work because part of saging or positive aging is embracing one's own mortality. And so, you know, for years, I mean, students even called me Dr. Death because I talked about death a lot, you know. So sure. Once you embrace it, you know, and I often use the book Tuesdays with Maury based on that true story because Maury says, well, when you learn how to die, you learn how to live. So it's really kind of freeing when you have that conversation. Since many of our listeners are going to be probably 50 plus, although I say the sooner you understand all these concepts, the better. Just like your example of a 38-year-old woman. So I'm assuming that some of our listeners, for themselves or for their parents, my parents are both living at 91, how would a person find out about you or palliative care, or what are the steps? What should we be thinking about? How would we get this started? How does it work?
So again, being mindful that, you know, 95%+ of palliative care programs nationally, and this is not a value judgment on the individuals in there, but it is really bookended and limited to those end-of-life conversations rather than upstream, which is what I think you and I are chatting about. One can do some research online. One can always reach out to me.
Uh-huh.
You know, I have conversations with people globally about themselves and their parents, and I'm always happy to do that. One can ask their primary care physician if there is a palliative program. Now, one also need be ready for the response, because most physicians, again, deem that hospice and will say, oh, you're not ready for that. And most physicians, being uncomfortable with the end-of-life space or conversation, it's more about their own insecurities and ignorances than what this really can bring to the table for anybody. So keeping that in mind, it's always good to inquire, and it's always good to know that it's your right. I hate to phrase it as, not only are you the patient, you're the customer. And I so often over the last decade have had people approach me and say, you know, the attending physician said, no, I'm not going to make a referral to the palliative program. Well, it's not really up to anyone but the individual or the family members. Mm-hmm. Period, the end. So be very steadfast and an advocate for yourself. If you don't get the answers you're looking for, if you don't have the openness that you would desire, look elsewhere. My group is always happy to try to point you in the right direction. Just know again that it's a conversation in its infancy, and there may be some pushback, again, not because you've done anything wrong, but because of the bias on this side of the long white coat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, excellent. Well, it's kind of interesting because, you know, I say I focus on the second half of life, and in workshops I often like to ask people, well, when is the second half of life? And really, it's sooner than you think.
Well, no one knows.
So, right. Yeah. I would say 40, you know, if the average age is about 80, say, you know, so it's earlier than what most people think.
Right.
And so some of the illnesses that you're talking about we've lost several friends in their 60s, you know, so not everybody is living to 80. But what makes your philosophy so successful?
I struggle with that because I often quit. You know, I'm just me. I'm at heart a country doctor. Okay, and it's kind of an average guy. I think what I've recognized and I try to bring to the table is that to live in this space with a significant illness or a new diagnosis, and wherever it's at in its manifestation, to successfully navigate it is not about knowing all the clinical options. It's not about anything other than being able to truly accept the premise of life, and that is ambiguity.
Interesting.
So I use an analogy. I've done quite a bit of work in Tanzania, and on my way there, we stop in Amsterdam, and there's a Rembrandt Museum. Renaissance painter, Dutch master, and whether I'm there in May or October, morning or night, sunny, rainy, and I look at a self-portrait of Rembrandt, it's fantastic. There's power, there's value, the brushstrokes, the color scheme. But no matter where I'm at in my journey of life, it's Rembrandt. And that to me signifies this linear algorithmic model of medicine. It's always going to be the same. So I deem medicine very Rembrandtian. And there's value in that. Mm-hmm. So if I end up in the ED or emergency department with chest pain, I want them to rule out a nine of a heart attack. It's usually something that I cooked and ate myself that's giving me such heartburn. But then if you go, say, to the MoMA, Museum of Modern Art in New York City, and you stand in front of a Jackson Pollock painting, abstract expressionism, and a lot of people are offended or confused, don't appreciate it. I've seen families go, come on, kids, let's just keep walking by, don't look at that. You know, it doesn't make sense to them. It's not linear. Jackson Pollock, to me, is the algorithm of life. Because September, May, morning, night, sunny, rainy, five times during the same visit, it's always a different painting based on who I am physically and emotionally and what I bring to that space. That's what we have to embrace, is that ambiguity. It's very difficult for our culture, our civilization in the Western Hemisphere.
Mm-hmm, that's for sure.
Because we like to go from point to point to point. And what is often missed is the opportunities to live, and that's not at these points, it's in between those points.
Excellent, yeah. That definitely fits in with saging work. You know, because actually sometimes people will ask me, do you have to be old to be a sage? But you have to be introspective, you have to be reflective, you have to process wisdom. An example I use for that is, it won an Oscar for best movie. It was a few years ago, Slumdog Millionaire.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you saw it, you know, how was the young man able to answer those questions? Well, he would reflect on his life experience and process the wisdom, lessons learned. And so he's someone I would have said as a sage. That's interesting.
There's a favorite author of mine, Lillian Smith. She was a social critic from the 50s in the South. And this is not a quote, but she says, the journey into life is only as broad as the journey within.
Oh, I like that.
So to your point, you know, we really have to be introspective and understand ourselves and accept the ambiguity that lies within ourselves before we can embrace and learn and live and grow and love with or without metastatic cancer or whatever it may be.
Well, I definitely think you're onto something, and you're a nationally recognized person in this area. I thought it was interesting. We just received a card from an old high school friend of mine, and he is in Wisconsin and was an oncology doctor for decades, but now is doing palliative care work. So I thought that was real interesting. So it definitely caught my attention, and I'm trying to learn more about this topic.
Me too.
Well, it's always a constant learning process,
absolutely.
That's for sure, and living, learning, saging. So tell me more, Dr. Tim, about is palliative care, is that covered by insurance? And
well, actually, I just work on tips. No, I'm just kidding. You know, more and more it is. The insurers are recognizing the value. And again, you know, it's still bookended and very much towards the very, very end of life. Mm-hmm. However, palliative care is through Medicare and private insurers paid for to a great extent. And more as time goes on. Mm-hmm. So it is.
Yeah, and if someone wanted to get in touch with you...
I would direct them to my website,
okay.
just Tim Ehrig, ehrigmd.com, and you can drop me a line. Okay. And I try to personally respond to as many as I can.
Okay, that's good to know. Well, given the fact that my listeners are, you know, trying to live the rest of their life to be the best of their life, what else should I have asked you that our listeners need to know?
I take from that subtextually, if there's some advice I could give to somebody, right, what might that be? What I've learned, and I still have much to learn, but there is a common thread. It is listen to your own voice, a little voice in your heart. Without fail, it will guide you, period. Doctors can come in, they can say this and that, and here's the test, and these are the results, and we need to do this, we need to do that. If we listen and we hear, and we stop to do that for our own voice, and if the physician and the care team can stop and listen and hear what your voice is telling us, that will define where we're at, that will define how much time we have. Absolutely, unequivocally, every time that little voice is right. And so the conflict comes in sometimes when the doctors and the healthcare providers are saying this and you're feeling something else. Always listen to that little voice, because I will promise you it is the path of truth and the path to increasing the quality and length of your life.
Well, that's excellent. Actually, it reminded me of another question here. That I've been thinking about with my parents, or even thinking about with myself, and I don't know if this comes out of hospice, but there's something called five wishes, and then there's something else called medical directive. Are those things that we should do or know about, or, you know, what kind of, are there documents that we should have completed to make sure that doctors fulfill our wishes?
Another great question. There are various documents that can be completed. I think the thing to be most mindful of is a conversation, mm-hmm, to empower those who are close to you and your loved ones to know what it is you may and may not want. If that conversation doesn't happen, I would encourage loved ones in this space to reflect on who someone was, how they lived their life, to be the guide. So it doesn't necessarily mean question, would you want to be on a ventilator? The question is, how did you live your life? You know, very different. And not, do you want to die? That's the wrong question, because inevitably all of us will. Mm-hmm. It's how do you want to live? So that folds into the opportunities we have for living wills, advanced directives. Five wishes are guides to if and when certain things happen, what would we want, what would we not want? I would seek advice from your primary care provider or social workers in that setting to learn more about those particular documents. I think they're valuable to have. I think the most valuable thing to do and where it starts is with the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point to remember. Well, we're kind of coming to a close here, so, you know, I want to thank you again for taking your time. And what would be your closing words for us?
Embrace ambiguity.
I like it. Well, listeners, may the rest of life be the best of life. And thank you, Dr. Tim.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening today. And the journey continues.
Absolutely.